Hi, it's Susan, and I'm an expert in helping musicians to have better relationships with themselves and with the world. In this episode, we meet John Parr Culver, clarinetist turned product manager, and John talks with great honesty about how shifting perspective away from his own needs and interests towards appreciating the talent and skills of others was a turning point in his career. Enjoy. Welcome to the Change Your Tune podcast. I'm your host, Susan Eldridge, and today I'm really delighted to welcome our guest, John Culver. John, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
John, this is a conversation about musicians and their interesting and non-linear journeys through life. Can you tell us what the work you do now is before we dig into your backstory and your music training?
Sure thing. I'm a product manager in the technology industry. And essentially that means that I own what gets built next in one of our offerings. I'm focused on listening to the customer, understanding what their needs are, what's going to help them the most, and translating those needs into items that engineers can work on, and then ultimately releasing that out to our customers.
Yeah, there's so much to dig into. I'm really looking forward to getting into this because already my brain is firing with all these connections. But tech and coding is not your background, correct?
No, it is not.
So can you tell us from like the very beginning, little John, how did you get to be a product manager?
Yeah, well, where to start? I studied clarinet at Eastman in Rochester, New York. I got my bachelor's degree there. And then I got my master's degree in clarinet performance as well from Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. During the course of that journey, I was taking auditions. And towards the end of my graduate studies, I realized I wasn't winning any. And I had this crisis where I realized, hey, how am I going to sustain a lifestyle after this work? And I was doing some freelance and I was teaching lessons, but you know, that can only get somebody so far. And fortunately, I was lucky to speak with one of the career counselors over at Carnegie Mellon, and she and I had a great conversation where she walked me through a conversation to connect what kinds of adjacent interests to music might be a good way to send my career path down. And so and it turned out that technology was one of those things, particularly Apple computers was the first thing, because they're such great devices for recording, composing, editing, creating music. And that sent me on the start to that journey.
So John, I'd love to hear a little bit more then when you reached out to that career counselor. I know working with lots of musicians that is a barrier that they can't get over because they've never had someone that they could speak the truth to about how they were feeling and about their concerns. So what was that experience like for you of actually probably saying some things you'd never said to someone before about how you were feeling about your life in music?
Yeah, fair question. It was a vulnerable feeling because I had spent the last, I think at that point, it was 15 years of my life thinking I am going to be a professional musician and getting a significant amount of validation that was a significant possibility along the way. So it was a bit of an identity crisis. And I'm thankful that she was as understanding and helpful as she was. And I think I don't know where this conversation is going to go, but I think people who are already either who are coaches or who are already doing things that are related to where musicians or people who are in the midst of a career transition or advancing their career, people who are doing the jobs that people might want to move into are often very generous with their time and their advice and their guidance. So I can't emphasize enough how important it is to have those kinds of conversations with others.
I can't agree more. You've absolutely nailed it. And I think what I have seen a lot of is, as you talked about, I spent 15 years thinking I was going to be a musician. And what that equates to is I spent 15 years in a practice room by myself, because the picture of musician that we have is professional player or singer. And these other skills about looking at the world, looking at a much broader world, and even approaching people that we don't know to ask for advice, they're the skills that are lacking in a lot of young musicians and music graduates and music students, is they're so fearful of asking someone who's not from their world for advice, when there's, as you said, their people are so generous, particularly if their journey has been, if there's similarities in there, they just want to help you and listen and be a comforting ear for you, because they've been there and they know exactly what it's like to be confused and, as you said, having an identity crisis about what the heck am I going to do with my life. So yeah, maybe if anyone's listening, they can take some heart that talking to strangers is not a terrible thing to do if you're seeking some advice. So you're saying, John, that you were interested in Apple computers. What, so you had your master's in music degree, you were in this quite confused, unsure state about what life was going to look like. So what was the journey from there?
Well, I knew some musicians who were working at an Apple store in Pittsburgh who had studied at Carnegie Mellon. So I talked to them about how they liked their experiences there, and they encouraged me to apply. And I was fortunate enough to interview and get the job. And it was a great learning experience being over there. But again, I have to emphasize, it was great to have worked with people in the past who had done the thing that I was hoping to do next. And I wanted to add one other thing about networking, and it's that there's so many meetups out there. There are so many alumni on LinkedIn who are willing to spare 15 to 20 minutes just to get on a phone call with other people who went to school. So it doesn't always have to be a totally cold outreach to others and just hope that they respond. Wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
I love, John, that you mentioned, you talked about that first experience, about learning from others who have done that before. And I think that's a thread that is coming through a lot of these discussions, is your music, often our music education does not prepare us to be independent learners, where we could say, oh, I don't know how this thing goes in, this piece of music, or I don't know how this task goes, but I've had enough repetitions of being independent in my learning that I know I can find a way through. And that's a point, I think, where a lot of musicians who are either looking to transition or wondering what they might do with themselves, that skill to say, I don't know, but I feel confident in myself and I've had enough repetitions of this that I can do it for myself and by myself. And so we often end up with this really difficult mindset about learned helplessness from musicians. So it's interesting that you referenced that, about you found it easier because you were learning from others, because that is what has generally happened in a classical music education, is there's one way to play it and the teacher tells you how and you just replicate that. Success, the end. So that would be something I would love to see in this really interesting space that we're in now, of people asking, why are we doing this? What purpose does it serve? Is that independence of thinking and action is really embedded, so that we have more music graduates coming out able to feel confident in themselves that they can navigate uncertainty and change.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And just to add to that, one other challenge that I had to overcome, and a part of my own personal mindset as a musician transitioning out of music, is I had this idea that as long as I worked really hard and became the best at what I do, and I would become successful. And that had nothing to do with appreciating the unique talents and skills that other people brought into the work that they did. And it was a big mindset transition that I had to make, that I wish I had made earlier on in my career. So I don't know what you think, Susan, about that, but I think that's something that I might have in common with other people who are a part of the world of music.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think, John, that's also where the often toxic attitude in orchestras and opera companies comes from, is that the performers believe that they are the ones with the expertise and the skills. And there's not an awareness that the development manager or the administrators and the decision makers are equally expert and masterful at their chosen craft. So I think that's often where that culture clash comes along from, is not understanding the mastery that others bring to their work, because our domain has been so limited to a palette of, Western European classical music from 150 years ago. So we're on the cusp of changing that. But John, so when you started your role at Apple, what happened to your clarinet at that point? And keep going with this story. What happened after that experience?
I still did play. I did a few gigs here and there. And actually, while I was at working at Apple, I did go down to Miami and played a week with New World Symphony, which was an awesome experience. But I also was thinking, hey, do I want to audition with them again since I was on the sub list this year? And after I had that experience, it was great. But I also realized that I didn't want to take the risk of pointing my career in that direction, which is when I think I finally made the decision that I want to take my career down the tech path. And that was hard because I felt like I had an identity crisis at that point in time. Previously, I would introduce to myself to people as, "Hi, I'm John. I'm a musician." And I could no longer say that and feel like I was being authentic, and I didn't know how to do that. And it took a while to be able to make a shift as to what that sense of identity felt like.
My absolute dream, John, for everyone who's ever done a music degree is that they continue to introduce themselves as, "Hi, I'm John, I'm a musician, and I use my music training as a product manager." Or as I just that wouldn't that be that would just solve so many problems if we were able to say, if we realized that the word musician does not have to mean just getting paid to play or sing, but instead it's a set of training and a set of tools and a way of being in the world that can mean you can do anything. Like, that's the whole purpose of this podcast, is that people can say, "Hi, I'm Jeff and I'm a musician and I make furniture for a living," or whatever it is your thing. Because you I can hear, when you spoke about what you do as a project manager, tick 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 tick, they're all things that your music training will feed into. But we don't have a framework, or we don't have models of people speaking in that way. So maybe, John, my challenge to you is that you might start reintroducing yourself as a musician who's a product manager for a tech company.
I will have to give that a try.
Yeah, because
And
then it makes people curious and they say, "Oh, how do those things go together?" And then you're able to be an advocate for the value of how we see the world.
fair point. And to what you said about how being a musician applies to other professions, I think there are a lot of things that musicians do in their studies and in their careers that translate really effectively into other lines of work. I think feedback is a great example. Music, compared to other professions, is a very high feedback environment. And some of it is very helpful feedback, some of it is unhelpful, and some of it borders on toxic. And I think the differentiator between helpful and helpful feedback is specificity. Because if I've heard people say, "Hey man, that was a great performance." And I think, great, I don't know why. And similarly, I've heard that sounds terrible, and I also don't understand why and how I can make that better. I think the most effective feedback is, if you considered this, you would it would sound more lyrical, or hey, this was wonderful because you were so precise with your staccato playing or something like that. And I think that translates really effectively into other professional environments. And musicians in some ways are uniquely equipped because they are so comfortable receiving such direct feedback. And on the flip side, many musicians are teachers, conductors, chamber music coaches. So they're people who are not just receiving, but giving that feedback, which can help them be very effective leaders.
And at the very start of this discussion, John, when I asked you, you know, what your profession is now, when you described what you do as a product manager, that is like feedback 101, right?
In a way, yes.
What is it you need? What is the problem? It's a problem statement. What is it you need? How would it be better? And just design thinking. So that's all your job now is all asking, as you said, asking good questions to elicit useful feedback, because not everybody has the skill to be able to give that specificity. And I think that's it's a really interesting point that we have, particularly in the conservatory model, lots of people teaching particularly instruments who are really excellent on the instruments but aren't excellent at teaching. And so that's when we get to that non-specificity of they themselves have not been trained in pedagogy to know, and they will teach the way they taught. And on the cycle sure. goes, to give feedback that it's specific, relevant, and useful. And also what happens is because we're in this such a kind of creative, messy, fertile space, is often you can use emotive, kind of, for want of a better word, flowery language that is still specific and to the point. So, you know, it doesn't have to sort of necessarily drill down to the level of the tip of the tongue on the back of the teeth needs to be in this position to make the tar sound at the start of the note. But you could talk about the emotion and the character of the story that gives the student or the client enough information to embody where you're going with this journey that you're sharing together. So I think there's a lot of work can be done in helping teachers at the conservatory level be better masters at the craft of teaching, not just the craft of playing and performing, which is where most of their experience has been. So John, I want to get back to you though. So you were at Apple, and did you enjoy that work?
It was great. I worked with so many creative colleagues. I worked with photographers, movie makers, other musicians, great leaders. So it was a very positive experience.
And you said you went to New World and did some work down there, and we're at another interesting point of trying to decide which of the forks in the road to choose. So what did you do?
Well, I realized I wanted to move my career forward, and I wanted to move down to Austin, Texas. And I had a few friends who I had worked with previously who suggested coming down and working at Oracle, which is the current company I work with, but it was for an inside sales role. So I moved on down there. And one thing that I learned while working in inside sales is I cared a lot about understanding more deeply the problems customers faced and the kinds of solutions that we offered to them, which is what brought me into a job called solution engineering. And what solution engineering is you basically help salespeople understand customers' problems by having deep dive meetings with them, demonstrate why the product is the best thing that helps them solve their problems, and justify the value of that product. And I did that for about 5 years. Towards the end of that journey, I'd heard a lot about these problems customers saw, and was used to the model that the job did. But what I was thinking was, it would be great if I could be a part of the next generation of solutions that are being proposed based on these kinds of problems that I'm hearing. And I was fortunate enough to work with some people in the project, rather product management organization, on a project. And I had the opportunity to ask them about the nature of the work that they did and some advice on how I could make the transition into that kind of role. And I was again the benefactor of the knowledge of others in that situation. And it wasn't just networking to get a job. It was guidance on, hey, you need to learn these things if you want to do this in the future in your career. So it's great to know others in order to guide. It was great to know others in order to guide me into certain learning journeys that I might not otherwise have taken.
And so I want to dig into a little bit then. What happened with the clarinet? What happened to the making of music in that time in your life?
Well, I play saxophone as well, as a bit of a side thing. And I've played a few clarinet gigs in Austin, and I also started up a jazz quartet in Austin. And we would play a couple gigs here and there and show up at a jam session every now and then. So I still found ways to make music. I will say, though, that now that I'm quarantined, I've spent most of my time taking Zoom piano lessons. And I wouldn't go so far as to say it's worth listening to, but it's been highly enjoyable.
I'm sure your neighbors have been enjoying it very much. Hot cross buns and Mary Had a Little Lamb.
So John, only on a good day.
Only on a good day. Two hands. you were saying about how much you loved being in that world of understanding the problems of others and identifying and articulating that for them when often they haven't quite got that subject matter expertise to do that and finding solutions. Do you see any parallels between that, the skill and the experience of doing that, and your music training?
That's an interesting question. I feel like as a musician, doing that problem evaluation and translating those into technical requirements that engineers can actually work on relates most to me in my musical experience to doing score analysis and being able to extract, like, what kinds of interpretive decisions should be made based on what I see in this score. Should I emphasize a note because it's dissonant? Should I lay off of it because it's a consonant note against a harmony? So those kinds of analytical skills that everybody has to go through in their undergraduate studies, I think, allow for mindsets that allow musicians to pivot into other kinds of roles.
And for me, that analogy, it's a chamber music rehearsal. We're all in a room together. It's not working. We're all contributing to why it's not working, and we've got to figure out why it's not working and propose some solutions to make it better. So that to me, it sounds exactly like being in a wind quintet rehearsal. And also these very important skills that we have as musicians of, say, I'm the horn player. I know that the problem is the subdivision and the internal pulse of the bassoon player is rocking the ensemble, but I can't just say that. So how do I help guide by asking some enlightened questions, guide the client / bassoon player to be able to understand that the choices they're making are the root cause of the problem. So it's chamber music rehearsing 101. It's people in a room together with a common purpose, trying to figure out the barriers that are in the way and get them out of the way. So I think, you know, what I've heard so much in your story is this comes up again and again, that we as musicians, we have such incredible skills, but we've really got them locked hard into a task specific model. And when we can understand it's the skill, not the task specificity, that we can say, well, okay, well, how else might I apply this incredible ability that I have to macro and micro a situation in my head at the same time, exactly as you talked about score analysis, is I can determine that the B flat in this chord, in the second last chord of the second movement of the symphony, is the one I need to enhance. And I also know that the symphony writ large is about grief and loss. So that all these incredible skills that we have, that we've just got them locked onto the really music specific outcome, that when we can release that grip a bit and see, oh, actually, that's the skill and the competency. Well, how else might I apply that? Where is there need for that expertise? And that's what you're doing, is applying all of that in your work in listening. That's your job, right?
In a way, yes.
It's to listen to people. But I want to hear more from you. How do you, where are the connections that you see? What are the skills that you think have come in from your music training that are pulling through to this work that you do now?
Yeah, so I mentioned the ability to give and receive feedback before. I think that's important. I also think learning is important. Musicians are perpetual learners, whether they hear a colleague interpret a concerto in a way they'd never heard before, or they hear a jazz pianist play a lick in an improv solo they hadn't heard, or maybe they see an NPR Tiny Desk concert that inspires them. I feel like those kinds of learning experiences can change an individual's the direction in which they take their art. And of course, the practice, just the effort of practicing, score analysis, learning a new piece of music, they're all learning efforts and they require an incredible amount of effort. Because musicians are so comfortable in doing those sorts of things, I feel like that allows musicians to also pick up new skills, whether it be learning how to write JavaScript, for example, or other items relatively quickly. So I think that's an important translatable skill. The other one, and I think this is a tough one to talk about, is dealing with failure. I mean, whether it's on a small scale like not winning an audition, or something like I would consider the fact that I did not end up pursuing a career as a clarinetist to be one of my most significant career failures, is an important thing to experience. Failures allow us to understand what went wrong, why it went wrong, and take those lessons and apply them to future experiences. And it's how we deal with failures that really shape us in the journeys that we take in our lives. It wasn't the only time I failed. I failed after that. But the fact that I did experience that one, I felt like helped prepare me for additional failures in the future. So it's a valuable thing.
I agree, and I wish there was more set up around failure in the training model, because often the failing only happens when we've left. And then we've not experienced it in a psychologically safe space where we've been prepared for that and where it's been normalized. And I think that's a really interesting point that the examples that you used were sort of when you were on your own, really. And yeah, I just think I think we'd be in a much better space if failure was normalized as part of the process, and also if there was a really meaningful and truthful discussion about what is and isn't in our control. Because
Agreed.
passing an audition is not in your control. creating a great preparation plan, following that, managing your health and well-being, doing the best you can with how you're feeling and the tools you've got on the day, rewarding yourself for following that's all within your control, but passing the audition is not in your control. And I think these are all the little micro cultural issues that are leading to a lot of distress with musicians, because how they think the world operates and how the world operates are not the same thing. But
Great point.
I love that. I love the learning, the way you were speaking about musicians learning. And I think the other thing that you slightly referenced in there was about the discipline that's required.
Absolutely.
Is that something that you find you is kind of one of the value, that's a part of the value that you bring in the work that you do now?
Certainly. I mean, for people who have spent some, depending on your instrument type, you might spend 4 hours a day in a practice room, you might spend 8 hours a day in a practice room. That the discipline to do something like that allows a musician to take a look at a Udemy course saying, well, this will take you 60 hours, and be like, no sweat, that's fine. And that's a daunting number to look at if you don't have that kind of discipline. So I think that is certainly a skill that applies.
That's a really awesome point you just made about looking at something that is not an immediate return on investment. And I think that's something that is normalized within our world, is saying, oh, I know I'm unlikely to be able to perform this concerto at a performance standard for probably a year or two or three. And I think that's a really awesome, that's a new kind of way of looking at it for me, is it's not just the discipline, but it's that long haul grit of I'm not going to get a return on this immediately or maybe even ever, but that doesn't mean that I should avoid giving it a go. So yeah, maybe everybody needs to learn the oboe to learn the value of sticking with something that's not very easy in the beginning.
Nice.
Maybe you could propose that to Oracle. It's the Oracle Oboe Orchestra, and everyone has to learn the oboe for 6 months.
That would be an interesting sounding ensemble.
So, John, can you tell me what is the role that music plays in your life now?
Music right now is it's still the one thing that brings me great joy more than anything else. You know, I still will, at the end of a day, sit down and listen to a Tchaikovsky serenade or a Mahler symphony or something along those lines. Or the reason why I take lessons on piano is not because I just like sitting down at a keyboard and moving my hands even more than I had during business hours. It's because making music is truly a joyous thing, whether it's a career or whether it's something that's supplemental to what we do day to day. So it is an important part of my lifestyle, even though it is not my career right now.
Did you ever have a time when making music was not a joyous thing in your life?
Gosh, that's a tough one. There have been certain times when I have felt like I had to play a gig and played a piece of music that I did not enjoy, but it had to be done, that it probably wasn't as joyous. And in a way, now that that's not a, hey, you got to do this to pay the bills, buddy, there's a kind of a sense of freedom to just pursue interesting things.
Yeah, you've exactly nailed it, in that sense of freedom, that and also the next step in that is I get to do this. I choose to do this. It's a gift and a choice, and I can choose where the joy is, and I can also choose to leave if I'm suffering. So I think that's that next step in that conversation is the choice that we have.
Right.
So, John, I'd just love to hear maybe one last thought from you for anyone who is either a recent music graduate or is in music in some way, who's thinking about what else might be for them. You talked about the value of reaching out to others and sort of creating a network of people that you can ask questions of and lean on. But have you got any other advice for anyone who's in this contemplation, or actively seeking to find the next place where their music expertise might lead them?
I think for the musicians who have determined what direction they want to move in, there are so many great learning resources out there in the world, like Udemy and LinkedIn Learning, that it's never been easier to skill up in different areas. So I think that's important. And I have to emphasize again, being able to connect with people and even better collaborate with people on projects to learn from them and to grow careers together with those people, I think is very important. The last thing I want to say is, it's for people who have lived the practice room lifestyle that I did for a long time. There's incredible value in all of the diverse skills and experiences that others bring to the table. So I think it's so important to appreciate that as early as possible. I think that's an important ingredient for success.
Amen to that, John. We have so much value to give when we start to see and accept that for ourselves and explore really where else that might sit. It's been such a gift hearing your journey today and all the incredible advice and insight that you shared. I hope that you might, next time you meet someone, introduce yourself as, "Hi, I'm John and I'm a musician." That's my dream. But thank you so much, John, for your time. We'll put links to anything, particularly to those learning platforms that you talked about, which we'll put those in the show notes. And thank you so much for your time and good luck with continuing with your piano lessons.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, Susan.
Thanks, John.
Hey, thanks for listening and for making it all the way to the end. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please help me share these stories by sharing this with others. You can post about it on your socials, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or you can leave me a rating and a review about this podcast. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Notable Values. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.